The following program contains mature subject matter. Listener discretion is advised.
The latest trends and hottest topics, love and sex, handled honestly and with passion. Here's Dr. Lori, CJAD 800. Sitting in tonight is Paris Mansouri.
Welcome to Passion, a show all about sex, love, and relationships. My name is Paris. I'm sitting in for Dr. Lori because she's on vacation. She's going to be back next week. Until then, I'm keeping her seat warmed, and hopefully I'm keeping you guys informed, entertained, and sharing some interesting insight with you guys. So tonight on the program, we are speaking to two very interesting people. First up, we're going to have Magnus Sullivan. He's a filmmaker, author, blogger. We're going to talk to him about helping men learn about their bodies, about sensuality, about self-pleasure, and that being key to better sex and even empathy for others. We're going to understand how those intertwine and get Magnus's take. And then after 10:30 p.m., we're going to speak with a director, a producer, and award-winning adult entertainment performer who's also the creator of The Guide to Wicked Sex. She's going to tell us all about sexual education that is based in teaching pleasure as a base. We're going to talk about consent. We're going to talk about having empowered conversations with your partner, and I'm sure a whole lot more. And in the middle of all this, if you have any questions, if you want any advice from her, I'm sure she's going to be willing to lend a few words. Or as well with Magnus, you're going to see he has tons of insight to share. He's got over 20 years of experience in filmmaking and just basically very well aware of what's going on when it comes to essentially being in touch with yourself, especially when it comes to the domain of male sexuality. So if you want to join the conversation, it's 514-800. If you want to text in, if you want to call in, it's 514-790-0800. First up, we've got our guest who's created two of the most recognized movies in the adult industry. One of them is called An Open Invitation, and the other is called Marriage 2.0. That one is one movie of the year at the Feminist Porn Awards back in 2016. He has launched Manshop.com, which is a reseller of sex toys for men, and he's behind BetterThanTheHand.com. It's a sex-positive blog that promotes male masturbation and discusses the various social issues that are associated with it. And on top of that, he's the author of a book by the same name, Better Than the Hand, How Masturbation is Key to Better Sex and Healthier Living. Magnus Sullivan has written extensively about the need to expand and enhance content production in the adult industry, and he joins us tonight to talk about all that and more. Welcome to the program, Magnus.
Great to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
Thank you. You have so much that you've done, and there's so much to cover. But I first want to talk about how you're a fourth generation San Francisco native. You live in the Bay Area with your family, and you have a background in ancient history, and somehow you end up in filmmaking.
Yeah, I think, you know, basically like many people of my generation, I was saved by the internet. You know, it was either like, you know, become a professor or drive a taxi or both. And, you know, the internet came around at that time. And I was really struggling to figure out, you know, when I decided I didn't want to be a professor, I was like, well, you know, what next, right? And there was actually, he was a Canadian guy who was a, you know, religious studies major who started a journal talking about, you know, internet trends. And this is 1993. And he was, you know, selling subscriptions to his monthly newsletter and making a ton of money. And I'm like, oh, well, I could do that. And that's what made me believe that with an ancient history background, I could actually, you know, contribute to something, and you know, as technical and new and innovative as, you know, early internet, biz dev was, right? It was just a completely new space back then. So I was just very, frankly, just very lucky. The timing was right, and you know, I jumped and landed in a good spot.
Okay, and then how did that translate into filmmaking?
Oh, that's kind of like a long, you know, story. But basically, I've always been interested in, storytelling, basically. Like, you know, how do you tell a story and how do you engage people? And particularly when you throw sex in, you know, is there anything unique about sex that could contribute to, you know, the creating a really unique experience for the viewer. And what frustrated me about porn, like before the tube sites hit, it was kind of like anybody who was shooting porn, you know, they basically just, you know, shot a sex scene, you know, and they shot five sex scenes, and then they would cut them up and distribute compilations, and they were making a ton of money by just, you know, shooting really basic sex. If they tried to layer stories into it, they were horrible. And then the tube sites came out, and people had a hard time making money with that. So I was really looking at what is adult missing in the whole area of storytelling and understanding the only asset that it has, because Hollywood, you know, basically owns storytelling, but adult owns sex. And Hollywood has been increasingly creeping into, as you know, Game of Thrones is, you know, an example of a very popular show that has, you know, full frontal nudity and stuff like that. You're seeing more and more of this stuff and kind of mock sex happen in Hollywood movies, and they do better filmmaking, they do better storytelling, they do better production, you know, the whole thing. The only thing adult has is hardcore sex. And so I started thinking about, you know, what's wrong with the way adult is shooting sex, and how might it be done differently, and how could sex be used the way Tarantino uses violence, right? Tarantino uses violence to engage an audience in a really unique way. And I think that is totally lacking in filmmaking and adult. And there are a lot of reasons for that. So I set out to try and make a movie that used sex in a way to engage the audience that would create a really compelling and completely identifiably adult cinematic experience.
And which film was that?
That's Marriage 2.0. I think that's the closest I've come. And it's just hard. There are reasons people don't do it. It's an incredibly hard process to get, you know, adult performers tend to view themselves, as kind of sexual performers and physical performers. And so when you ask them to go into the realm of assuming like an emotional state and portraying like a variety of emotional states and transitions of it, it's like they're not trained to do that. And secondly, particularly now, most adult performers view themselves as having a unique brand. Like Jessica Drake, who's coming on your show, if you look at her movies, she tends to look like Jessica Drake all the time, and that's because her fans want her to look a certain way. So if you come to a performer and say, like, in this scene, I want you to look completely exhausted with no makeup, and, you know, it's a horrible Monday morning after a fight, it's like you just don't see these types of things, right? And that's what you need to do to have the kind of range of, you know, emotional experience that engages your audience in a story. So there's a lot, let alone, like, you know, the film crews, the cinematographers really aren't trained that way. They're trained to do one thing and they do that extremely well. It's just that thing that the craft they've honed is now free, right? So if you have to kind of transition into another way of making movies and another way of shooting sex and another way of talking and thinking about sex and another way of monetizing it, right, it's requiring that the industry completely rethink its position.
We're speaking.
And the fact is, you know,
Magnus,
filmmakers are doing that much better than adult filmmakers.
I'm going to definitely get your take on that. I'm going to get your take on adult films and the role they're playing in society as well, and how they've basically been, you know, cultural punctuation marks. We're speaking with Magnus Sullivan. He's a filmmaker, author, and blogger. We're going to continue talking with him.
Your relationship's on the line. Connect with Dr. Lori now, 514-790-0800. Passion, News Talk Radio, CJAD 800. Sitting in tonight is Paris Mansouri.
Welcome back to the program. We've been speaking with Magnus Sullivan. He is an author, a blogger. He's behind manshop.com, which resells sex toys. He's also the creator of betterthanthehand.com, which is a sex-positive blog that promotes male masturbation and discusses the various social issues that are associated with it. And we're going to be talking to him about a lot of stuff, but so far we've been talking about filmmaking and essentially the key components of adult films and how they'll vary from mainstream films. And Magnus, you were saying, you were talking a little bit about the difficulties you came across, but clearly they weren't that difficult because the movie did well and you won awards for it.
But it wasn't very well received by the adult industry, strangely, right?
Okay.
So, yes, it did do well. It was highly regarded. Critics loved it. And I think a lot of people in, in the industry did understand what I was doing and why it was important to do that. But it's, you know, it's not easy. So let me when I was shooting the film, I pulled a lot of favors, and I was shooting one scene at a friend's house who's an investment banker who invests in a lot of indie films. And when I came in there with my crew, you know, he said, "Hey, so what's this, a small budget, you know, like a small budget film?" And I said, "Yeah, yeah, it's a small budget." He said, "What, like $3 million? And I said, "Yeah, no." So like, "Oh, 1.5? No. And he said, like $1 million? And I said, "Yeah, no, like 70,000. Right? So that's a huge budget in adult.
Okay.
Nobody is shooting $70,000 movies these days.
Right.
They mainly are in the 25 to 50 range, 50 being a huge budget in today's film. There's only so much you can do to originally score a movie, to spend months editing the movie, to most adult films are basically improvisational. You have one shoot. If anything goes wrong, like in the capture of the video, you just work with what you got, right? You don't go back and reshoot a scene. There's no audio dubbing, so the audio is really generally pretty bad. So these are all the things that are like visual cues. If we walked into a movie theater and we see a science fiction movie shot in the 60s, you're like, that doesn't quite look right because we're used to a level of visual sophistication that is very high. And that's kind of what adults dealing with, is that today's movie experience, you know, the consumers expect a lot. And they walk into a $25,000 movie, which is basically like the budget of, you know, a graduate in film school, and that's, yeah, it's kind of what you get. So, you know, you're faced with the challenge of trying to, like, engage an audience that has expectations of a level of talent, a level of time, a level of financial support that's not existent in the adult industry. So you have to make up for it with these, like, Herculean efforts.
Right.
I'm not sure anybody will make a movie like the one we made again. I mean, we had the backing of Adam and Eve, which is one of the biggest adult, you know, companies in the United States.
I'm just wondering on my end, seeing all the efforts that are going into making, adult films and on large budgets but are tight budgets compared to what Hollywood has to work with. Why do you think, first of all, you know, what role do you feel adult films play in today's society? How have they evolved and why do you think they're necessary?
Well, I mean, I think they're necessary. I mean, so that question has many different layers to it, right? There's a ton of adult content out there that's free, and people, you know, the free adult sites are the most trafficked sites on Earth. So people use these sites to, you know, realize sexual fantasies, and I talk to people, I'm kind of like, you know, what is more core to our existence than sex and sexuality and fantasy, and particularly, you know, sexual fantasy? And, you know, adult films are realizing that need and satisfying that need for us. And what's been interesting is that, you know, there are drawbacks and benefits, right? Because the cost of production has gone down so much, it's enabled people to shoot incredibly specific content, right? So, you know, now you can go on the internet and you can find, you know, whatever you want. Just do a search string on a tube site and there's something, you know, something's been shot to satisfy that need. And a lot of people, you know, talk about that as like it's sort of like a golden age in its own way, which is that everybody feels a sense of belonging, right? You know, you're not feeling like I'm a total freak if there are another, you know, 50,000 people liking this very particular type of content that you also like, right? So that's a very positive thing. From a business standpoint and from, you know, the standpoint of developing a larger audience, you know, adult films have been increasingly relegated to, you know, a small small, dark corner of the internet where, you know, 30 years ago, 40 years ago, they were playing in cinema theaters, right? They were having cinematic release, and the people making those movies were thinking that they were making those, you know, real movies, right? They were using sex to make real movies, engage the audience in a real way. That doesn't exist anymore in adult. Everybody knows what the deal is, you know? You make a movie, and you're trying to get the return off of a broadcast release, a combination of different, you know, revenue channels. But nobody's thinking I'm actually making a real movie.
Right. And with that transition, I just want to jump over. I mean, we've talked about your filmmaking part, but I feel like you've got so much insight to share. But since we're running out of time, I definitely wanted to talk about the betterthanthehand.com blog and the book. And so much has come from it, because I imagine making films and having your audience in mind, there's probably a lot of information that you've been able to gather with regards to male behavior. And I know that, you know, you and I had spoken about the statement that straight men are behind when it comes to relationships with themselves and with those around them. And I wanted your take on that statement, because I thought it was really interesting.
Well, I got interested in this whole topic. There was a major case in the United States that involved an Olympic-level swimmer at Stanford University, Brock Turner. And he was accused and then convicted of raping a woman on campus. And what really struck me was how, you know, not only the school, not only the judicial system and his parents thought about, but like culturally, this seemed to be sort of, you know, accepted behavior. And you saw that really play out with Trump and his comments about groping and molesting women, and it's becoming more and more clear, you know, the kind of manipulative power he's influenced over women. And this has just been accepted to the point where, you elect this guy the most powerful person in the world. And that struck me as, like, there's something fundamentally, deeply wrong with our culture and the way that straight men in particular are expressing and thinking about their own sexuality. And I was like, what is going on there? And so I started to, you know, connect some dots, and ended up speaking with a friend of mine, Carol Queen, who's one of the premier sexologists in the country. And I said, like, I think there's an elephant in the room with straight men and the way they're thinking about self-pleasure, relationships with people in general, the inability to, you know, really empathize, which is, you know, try to feel what the other person's feeling, and that's tied to an inability to really understand the other and a fear of the other, which is not present in gay culture in the same way, right? So I started really looking at what are the gaps with straight men, and I kind of began to tie that back to just the way people approach their bodies and the shame they have around masturbation, and the way people kind of joke about it, but don't really talk about it, and it's a topic of fear for women, not just men. And so there's all of this tension and fear around men pleasuring themselves and what that means in our culture, and what that means for men feeling comfortable with their sexuality and feeling comfortable talking about it and feeling comfortable exploring it, and that lack of comfort, you know, results in the tension that explodes in violence, right? So these are kind of like these high-end meta issues that got you, me interested in the topic.
Right, and that you handle on betterthanthehand.com. Magnus, we are out of time. If somebody wants to connect with you directly, do you have any social handles where they could tweet at you or DM you if they want to know more about the kind of work you do, or do they just go to the betterthanthehand.com?
Yeah, that they'll be able to contact me on the site there, or theman@manshop.com is also an email that goes directly to me.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for your time and for joining us tonight, for your insight. I leave on a cliffhanger, and I highly encourage everyone to go to betterthanthehand.com. It's a sex-positive blog that promotes male masturbation and discusses the various social issues associated with it. Magnus Sullivan is a filmmaker, a blogger, and the author behind it. Thank you so much for joining joining us. And
thank you, Paris.
Absolutely. Coming up, we are going to be talking to Jessica Drake, and I'm going to tell you all about her. Stay tuned.
The following program contains mature subject matter. Listener discretion is advised.
From the pleasure to the pain and everything in between. Passion with Dr. Lori. News Talk Radio, CJAD 800. Sitting in tonight is Paris Mansouri.
Welcome back to the program. My name is Paris. Dr. Lori is on vacation. She's going to be back next Thursday. Until then, I'm keeping her chair warm for you guys, hopefully with insight and information, and hopefully leaving you with something to think about. On Monday night, we're going to have David Essel, who's the author of the book Focus. On Tuesday is Trouble Tuesday. We're going to have Amanda Luderman in studio, and Dating Dilemmas on Wednesday. So lots more to come. But our next guest, I am so excited to speak with her. She is a director. She's a producer. She's an award-winning adult entertainment performer. She's an industry veteran. Her name is Jessica Drake. You can connect with her on Twitter at The Jessica Drake or at Guide to Wicked Sex. Her work is rooted in teaching shameless, pleasure-based, consent-aware sex ed. She's joining us tonight to talk a little bit about adult entertainment, but mostly about sexual education, about consent, about using condoms, about having empowered conversations, and I'm sure a whole lot more. Jessica, thank you so much for joining us.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Absolutely. So before we discuss, you know, how much your work has evolved over the years, your activism, your educational work, what you're currently involved in, I'd love to just go back to the beginning and just find out how you got started in the industry.
Well, it's really a bit of a cliche story, at least in the beginning. I was stripping my way through college. Yes, that really happens. And I was always super comfortable on stage, a super sexual being at that time, very experimental, and like most people, you know, lacking some resources. I was in school majoring in psychology, and I happened to meet some people that were involved in the adult industry, and I just became really fascinated with it, with the idea of the adult industry being a business as it is. And, you know, I just got to be really great friends with these people. And after a while, every once in a while, they would joke around with me. They'd be like, so do you want to make a movie? And I'd always say, no, I don't really think that's for me, or I wouldn't know what to do. But after I had known them for about a year, year and a half, and I had come out here to LA a few times, I was living in Texas back then, I surprised them one day and I was like, you know, I would really love to see a movie being made. Like, I want to see this in action. I want to understand what really happens on a set. I was already thinking about doing movies. They just didn't know it. So they took me onto a set and I watched everything that was happening. And I saw, you know, how everybody related to one another. And I mean, look, a lot of viewers don't understand that it's just so different on a set than it is when you see the finished product, right? So that was me back then, super surprised on the set about, you know, things that were going on. And shortly after, I decided to try making movies. And my logic was, look, you know, I'm going to try this. If I don't enjoy it, I'm not going to do it again. I really loved it. I really liked it a lot. And I went on to sign a contract with Wicked Pictures, which is the best company in adult to date. Like, we've been around since 1993. Of course, I haven't been with us that long, but I have been with us for 13 years now. And they're just a great studio, and they've encouraged me to grow in more ways than just as a performer. Like, I began to write. I then started to direct for Wicked. After that is when I started to get into sex education, and that was probably about 7 or 8 years ago. So that's it in a nutshell. That's like the Cliff Notes version.
Perfect. And then I read an interview where you said that people slowly started to come to you for sex advice, and that a few of them had, you know, really touched you, affected you, made an impact, and that it actually made you reconsider how you portray sex in movies. Can you tell me a little bit about that? I have a feeling that maybe was part of the transition.
It was very much part of the transition. I have done a lot of appearances over the years as a wicked contract girl. And what that means is that I show up at like a nightclub and host a party, or I show up at an adult store and I sit behind a table and I sign autographs and pictures and take photos with people and sell DVDs and things like that. And I noticed a very gradual but noticeable change in the demographic of folks that were coming out to see me, whereas in the beginning, it was always long lines of guys, right? Like just men waiting in line and taking photos and like saying, yeah, I have all your movies. And I think it kind of coincided with a few different things. I think the internet became way more popular. And so people were comfortable exploring their sexualities with the anonymity of a computer screen, right? I also think that adult stores sort of shed that reputation that they previously had of being a dark, seedy, dirty place. And people realized, hey, these are well-lit, comfortable, boutique-like environments where I can buy quality adult products. Like, what's not to like about this? So men started bringing their wives and girlfriends. And then after that, women started coming on their own. And then we saw just everyone starting to come out. And I had a few very specific catalysts. I had a couple coming to me. How freely can I speak when I use terminology here?
We can say, basically biological terminology.
Okay, good. I'm glad I asked that question. So I had a couple come to me, and they were telling me that they thought that something was wrong with them because they couldn't do a particular sex act that they had seen me do in a movie. And I was like, oh my goodness, you don't see or understand what the prep work that goes into that particular sex act. What you're seeing when the cameras are rolling and the movie has been edited, that's the polished, finished product. You're not seeing everything that goes on before that. Another person came to me and said, look, I'm in a really bad place because I've been married for 15 years. My partner thinks I'm having orgasms. I'm not. And I've been faking it this whole time. And he really thinks he's doing a great job because I've been faking it. And so I felt obligated to not just help these people on an individual basis, but it definitely caused me to reevaluate what I'm doing. Wicked is and has been since 1999 a condom-only company. And we are to date the only company in the heterosexual adult market that is condoms only. So I've always been a condom-only performer. But I think that a lot of the time people look at movies and they don't really understand everything that goes into doing it. So not only did I decide to continue setting an example on safer sex, because no sex is completely safe, but I also started taking into consideration the fact that there are folks at home that aren't able to navigate between this fantasy that they see on screen and what the reality is. So I started incorporating things like clitoral stimulation into my sex and made it more, let's say, I'm really trying to say the right thing here.
Encouraging for self-exploration for women as
yes,
well.
That's
there
awesome.
We go. We're speaking with Jessica Drake. She's a sexual health and wellness educator. She is the creator of The Guide to Wicked Sex, and she is a Wicked Pictures contract star for over 10 years. We're going to be speaking more with her coming up about sexual education, the curriculum we're dealing with. We're going to talk about consent, how it shifted over the years, and basically any questions that you want to throw our way. You're listening to Passion. We're on weeknights from 10 to 11 p.m. talking love, sex, and relationships. You can text in your questions at 514-800 or by calling in at 514-790-0800.
Straight talk that's all inclusive. Passion with Dr. Lori. News Talk Radio, CJAD 800.
Welcome back to the program. My name is Paris. I'm sitting in for Dr. Lori, who is away. She's on vacation in Spain. If you want to connect with her, it's at Dr. Lori Batito on Twitter. You can send her messages and wish her a happy vacation. Until she's back, though, I'm keeping her seat warm. And tonight I have the pleasure and privilege of speaking to Ms. Jessica Drake. She's a sexual health and wellness educator. She's the creator of the Guide to Wicked Sex, and she's also a Wicked Pictures contract star for over 10 years. We've been talking a little bit about basically adult entertainment films and how they create this perception. And Jessica was talking about how some fan questions have triggered certain realizations, and it made her adjust. And over the years, Jessica, I imagine you've come to realize a lot more things as you've gone down the line, and that probably incited you to get involved in sexual education. If it were up to you, how early would sexual education begin, and what would it involve?
Sex education needs to start when a person's life starts, on a need-to-know basis, of course. I think when we're talking about sex ed and kids, I think we're really taking it for granted that A, school would be teaching something, B, the parents are teaching something, C, kids are never seeing porn. And I think the sad reality is that children are watching content that they shouldn't be watching. They have no sex education or no tools with which to navigate that. And parents are, for the most part, uncomfortable talking about it. For me, I was raised Jehovah's Witness. I also attended a school, a private school, that taught abstinence-only sex education. I had no resources as far as who to ask very specific questions about my body that went beyond either basic anatomy or menstruation when I got to that age. And I think it's really important to help a child establish bodily autonomy early on in life. I think that they need to be taught consent. It should be integrated into their teaching. And I think that we should be more open when it comes to talking to our kids and kids in general about sex and sexuality. I think a lot of the time we have a tendency to maybe give them a feeling of shame surrounding something that they don't know. So they come away from it feeling somewhat shameful, or thinking that it's something to hide, or that it's somewhat dirty. And these are all myths that we have to dispel. And we really have to do this by communication and education.
I'd love to talk to you about consent as well. We don't have that much time. It goes way too fast, especially when it's such an interesting conversation, I find. So about consent, what is the difference between consent and affirmative consent? I feel like consent is shifting over the years, and the conversation is becoming more and more pressing. Can you talk to us a little bit about that?
Yes, and it is a very nuanced conversation, and I do wish that we had more time to discuss it. Consent is something that has to be interwoven into every conversation that we have about sexuality, about our relationships, both sexual relationships, interpersonal relationships, and consent. And it should be an enthusiastic version of consent, not just an absence of the word no. So silence does not equal consent. And what I've been teaching lately, I'll just condense it, are the three pillars of consent. The first pillar of consent is understanding what you're agreeing to. The second pillar is figuring out in your own mind what it is you're comfortable with in that equation. And then the third pillar of consent is communicating that to the other person. And I just think it's so incredibly important. I speak at universities with kids that are getting into these positions and situations where they haven't been handed the skills to verbally consent to things, or for that matter, even pick up on nonverbal cues.
It's such a heavy topic, and I wish I could go more about it, but I definitely, on the last question for you, I wanted to go back to your Guide to Wicked Sex, if we can. Where can people find out more about your Guide to Wicked Sex, first of all?
Well, the place that they can see it online is wicked.com. That's a membership website. So that's going to have all of my adult content on it, plus the educational series mixed in. They can also visit guidetowickedsex.com. It's a website that sort of backs up the series. And the Guide to Wicked Sex, I began creating them in 2011, and they cover, each edition covers a specific type of sexual activity. And with, like, I can't even say the titles on the show, but within every one of the editions of the guides, we have some really realistic conversations about anatomy, consent, pleasure, discussing boundaries. Some of my most successful ones are the Kama Sutra, female masturbation, BDSM for beginners, and plus size sex. I think I can comfortably.
Yeah, absolutely. Can. But can I ask you one? If you were going to leave us with the last bit of insight, I was going to ask you the top three tips from your guys, but we don't have time. We have time for one Jessica Drake tip. What would be one of your top tips? And of course, anyone going onto those websites would be able to find out more. But do you have one that you could leave us with?
I'll do you one better. I'll say it quickly and I'll give you three. Communication, okay. Lubrication, do what works for you.
Wonderful. Jessica Drake, it's been such a pleasure. I hope we get to continue the conversation because there's so much more to cover. Really appreciate your insight tonight.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
That was Jessica Drake. She is a sexual health and wellness educator, the creator of The Guide to Wicked Sex. She's a Wicked Pictures contract star for over 10 years now. If you want to connect with her, it's at The Jessica Drake on Twitter and at Guide to Wicked Sex on Twitter as well. I want to thank everybody for joining us, for tuning in. First of all, I want to thank Magnus Sullivan for joining us, to Jessica Drake as well for sharing their story and their insight with us. That's it for tonight. I am back on Monday night with David Essel. He's the author of the book Focus. We're going to discuss why we attract emotionally unavailable partners, how to get closure, and why it's important to set boundaries and consequences. Thank you again for tuning in tonight. I want to thank our technical producer, David Simon. You've been listening to Passion. If you want to connect with Dr. Lori, she is back next week, but you can email her at lori@drlori.com. If you want to connect with me, it's at Paris Mansouri on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. I'll speak to you on Monday. Have a great rest of the evening, and remember to fill your life with passion.